This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, welcome back, Lucha Lushes. Once again, it's me. You know what I never do is introduce myself. I am Timothy Robert Buckner, host of the show. Also, I guess,
co-host. How long have you been host of this show?
I've been host of this show pretty much full time since around the time that it started.
That makes sense.
Taking a couple weeks off here and there, allowed you to host, really step back on the top beer shows and let you host that, just because I didn't really want that stink on me. As that show is kind of, as the numbers continue to dwindle on that show, I'm going to pass it off on you.
Okay, thanks.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I just wanted to let you kind of have your thing. I know you're also work on your other podcast, Story Germ. Speaking of, you know, you, I should mention who you are, my co-host on this show, Adrian Del La Torre. Adrian, how are you doing today?
Good. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Adrian. And so we have a special guest today who you heard chuckling a little bit there. And it's kind of interesting for me because I talk to this guy every week at this point. It's Pete Schermacher from This Week in Wrestling, Titans of Wrestling, Space City Podcast, regular guest on Place to Be Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. I mean, the guy's all over the place. Pete, how are you doing today?
Hey, you're doing fantastic, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Yeah, of course. And as I said, I was actually talking to Quentin, who, you know, friend of the show, former guest, former co-host, and podcast host himself, and he was talking about having you on over on Psychology is Dead, and I said, well, geez, I can't have Quentin scooping my own co-host as a guest before I have him. So I had to get you on as soon as possible here. So I guess the first question, as I always start out on the show, is, Pete, this one's a little weird because it's, you know, I think everybody knows, but are you now or have you ever been a member of the Pro Wrestling Only board?
Not only have I been, I'm one of the mods.
Yeah, nice. You are one of the cornerstones of the site. I mean, your match reviews, especially when it comes to NWA On Demand, as we're going to talk about when we get through here, are a big part of the board at this point, and you always bring thought-provoking, interesting details. But kind of, I guess let's start it. When did you start to get involved in Pro Wrestling Only, the board, and when did you, like, how did it come about that you became one of the moderators?
It all started when they were called New Millennium Blues, and this was, ironically, since we just finished up the top 100 greatest, or what was it, 100 greatest wrestlers of all time, right?
Yeah, it was the greatest wrestler ever, probably.
Yeah, I was invited over by JDW. I was like, you guys can't do top 100 on Smart Choice without having my hand on the board of shoe over here. And that's where I met Will. And I'm like, man, he has all these great comps. And he just had just started doing these comps. And that's where I met Lost. Like, man, he had this, like, great list of which he doesn't really do anymore, of his top 500 matches he's ever seen, and he'd do these reviews. And then I joined their board, the New Millennium Blues, which then turned into Pro Wrestling Only. And then the last year or two, I was just granted mod status. It was just like, here, Pete, well, Pete's a new mod, and that's how it was.
Okay. And so from there, you were just kind of on the PWO board.
I'm sorry to cut you off. I've been on the PWO board, and then with Death Valley, we're like a kind of a brother-sister board with Death Valley Driver in a way. And the Death Valley Driver does these 80s sets. And before I was a mod, I was helped on the Mid-South set. I was an active member on the World Class set. And I helped put together the Greatest Hits of Smoky Mountain Wrestling set. And right now we're working on NWA and or Crockett and redoing the WWF one right now. And that's all under a secret, double secret hidden portion of the board over that only, I think, maybe 12 people have access to. Maybe 12 to 15 people have access to. And we go and we watch everything, every single thing, ounce of footage of that promotion. So it's really a time-consuming process. So when those discs come out, I mean, there's usually three of us on a committee. and we go through everything, every ounce of footage, and come up with the, either the top 50, 100, or 150 matches from the promotion from the 80s, and that's what we're that's our project right now. Is most one is Crockett.
Okay. I guess quickly before I get into what I wanted to get into now, the moniker Shoe. I'm guessing it's a takeoff on your last name, but I think a lot of people don't realize that if they only hear you referred to as Pete. But is that where it came from?
Yeah, absolutely correct. Me and my brother, I have a younger brother. And so in high school, because I was the older brother, I was Big Shoe and my brother was Little Shoe. And a funny story out of that is, and then all our friends would call my dad Mr. Shoe. And we all, me and my brother, were always like S-H-O-E, like the Shoe. So one year for Christmas, my dad got us all football jerseys, but he spelt it S-H-U like he was a Chinaman. And we're like, dude, you're just so not hip, man. That's totally not what the nickname is. It's based off the Shoe. Because, no one could ever pronounce her name Schumacher. So most be like, the coaches would always go, hey, Shoemaker. So it's just something like that. And then everyone thinks Schumacher means shoemaker in another language. Well, actually, it means umbrella maker.
Yeah. That's pretty good, actually.
In German, yeah.
Yeah. That's actually really interesting. Which is funny, because I think my last name actually means something more like a shoemaker. I think it's a cobbler or something like that.
A cobbler.
So my last name is Buckner. It's German, and it means, I think, it's like a shoe person, someone who works with shoes. So
I thought you came from a long line of buck-toothed people. In Germany. I thought your family came from a long line of buck-tooth Germans is what I thought it meant.
That's what it is.
But I guess I'm wrong. But
I did want to bring up, because you mentioned, kind of the amount of time that goes into watching all the footage from it. And one thing that maybe was a drop in the bucket when it comes to a time suck for you that just recently came to an end was Titans of Wrestling. But let's talk about the genesis of Titans of Wrestling. When did you decide to, or when were you asked, or when did you get involved with Titans of Wrestling?
Okay. When it first started, it was Parv and James who quit the show after 14 episodes, and quit it in a epic, you want to talk about burning bridges. That guy burned his bridges. He wished everyone died of cancer on Pro Wrestling Only, and it just went up in flames and the weirdest thing ever. And it started with those two, and they had a pretty pretty lacking show. It didn't have any oomph. Parv is naturally dry, but he has a humorous side to him and a witty side to him. But James is naturally dry, and he didn't like talking. So he had this really weird dynamic, because that Parv is the host, just keeps on constantly tossing to James, and he really didn't have a whole lot to say. And so I had bought a set, because I'm a collector of stuff, of a footage, and I'm like, oh, this is all nice, a big WWF set all put together, all in a chronological order, this is right up my alley, because I'm a big matches guy, but I like promos, and I like to see the angles also involved with them, and the James set really did that really well, and he goes, suggests to Parv, why don't we have Pete on and Johnny Sorrow, and I think Parv suggested Kelly or something to that effect, and then the five of us started doing it, and at first they were going to, Parv thought it was too many mouths to feed, and was going to go, let's just rotate, we'll go with three-man groups, me and James always the constant, bring one of you guys on. After that talking went around with that, it kind of dropped, and then we tried around the first few episodes of trying different roles, but eventually, James suggested, I think Pete's probably the best analysis guy out of us all, let him go first, because at first we had just a wacky order, and me, who actually probably was the more detailed guy when it came to the matches, was going last, I think. It kind of just like, you know, you're wasting kind of my skill set. Johnny's good at, like, you know, throwing in a weird-ass observation or a funny joke or a quip. And so he was always good to go with second. And Kelly was never a big analysis guy, even though he does know a lot about it. He was more of the historian, so he could throw down history at the end, like as kind of like the button up of the thing. So finally, we all found our roles in our voices. Probably after probably about five or six shows and stuff like that. And at first, when James was on board, there was a lot of infighting because he was like talking shit behind each other's backs, and we had like this and this. But you know, then we all came to talk to each other without James and realized what a shit stirrer he was. But then a couple episodes later, he just flakes out and wishes everyone dies of cancer and a horrible, bummy, just a disgusting. You know, I mean, that's just a horrible thing to say.
Yeah, that's really weird. I wonder, has he reached out to anybody at all that you know of to, I don't know, explain or if not apologize?
No, but it was always just he always had a weird vibe about him. I mean, I don't want to, he decided to join Facebook, and yeah, we were always wondering if that was really his picture, because the only friends on there were us, I think, and it was just a weird dynamic type of thing.
Interesting. That's an interesting thing. You guys did kind of hit the ground running once you got to what became the kind of the Titans, as you guys refer to it, the four of you. And as you said, fitting your own roles. But your role has always been really interesting to me. And it's a big part of why I enjoy doing a podcast with you, which if anybody's listening to this and hasn't listened to the other show, I would be shocked, but they really should check it out. But because I feel like I've really learned a lot about picking and critiquing matches, you know, getting to talk to you about wrestling so frequently. But like, where do you think you kind of developed your process of critiquing matches, not just in the details of, you know, the moves here and there, but also a lot of times in bigger picture stuff that I think that people miss?
That's a good question. One, I appreciate the compliment. Two, you know, I'm really not sure. I think one, it has to do with watching a lot of footage. And I mean, I think the more things you can like observe and take in and you just observe, I think you can become more of an expert by watching things. And it's also something I've like, and it might be because I'm good at reading people and understanding things. I don't know. It's like, I've always been really well at work. I work in retail, and I've always been really good at stopping shoplifters. Like, people talk, like, they use me as an example of being like being like gloss prevention always talks about me being a monster when it comes to stopping shoplifters and getting product back and stuff. And I think the same thing with wrestling. I think it's which is interesting. I think it's just how it's my mind is wired in a way. In high school, and I played basketball, I was a solid starter in the starting five, but you know, that really, I was actually a better sixth man. And my coaches realized it and benched me. And at first I was like, why are they benching me? I'm much better than the guy who they're starting. But it was because I was able to watch the flow of a game and pick out how I can best help my team to achieve a victory. If it meant me taking over and scoring, I could do that. If I needed to rebound, I could do that. I could watch plays develop and see tendencies, and then I would be able to help out. An example would be in basketball, there'd be a man-on-man full-court press, and we had teams would do this, and I'd watch it from the sidelines. I'm like, okay, I can come in and do this and help. One example would be I would come in and set a pick on the point guard and really just honestly run right into me and almost knock himself out, but it would free up our guard for an easy layup. And then that's something I might not have picked up all in the game, but by watching it, I was able to analyze it and do it and help our team. And I think it's the same way, weird as it is, I think it's the same way how my brain is wired when it comes to watching wrestling footage. I'm picking up tendencies or working the arm or going back to the arm or they're working the neck or what have you. and pick up on it and then be able to analyze it. I think I'm analytical in that sense.
Yeah, that's I find myself in some ways relating to a lot of what you're saying there. But do you find did you ever take a break from wrestling fandom, or were you kind of solidly a wrestling fan your entire life?
I want to say I've been solid, but there's been breaks. Let's see. I mean, I was born in New York, and I didn't watch WWF then because I was way too. I was there for like a year maybe. Moved to Chicago. Still don't have any memories of becoming a fan. My first memories were in St. Louis. Became a fan of St. Louis wrestling, and we got World Class Championship Wrestling on the religious station. Became a fan of the Von Erichs, who were also used as big stars in St. Louis. Moved from St. Louis to Texas into Houston, and that's where I like. Now I'm a huge NWA On Demand fan because that's the territory I kind of grew up watching in my heyday, and went to a lot of the matches there. I graduated high school in 91 and went to college. And so from 91 to 95, I'd watch it here and there. But when I was in college, I just didn't have the time, but I'm out doing other things. And you know, at the college dorm, the first couple of years, you couldn't order pay-per-views to the dorm. That was out of the question. The internet wasn't really going strong then. So all you got was the TV, and usually on the weekends I was a college student, so I was studying or partying or doing something a lot more fun at the time. So I kind of got away from the wrestling, even though I would still buy wrestling magazines and read them, so I'd be caught up on it. That was really when I really stepped away. And then I came back when I got out of college. I was living in, I moved to Austin in like 96. And then that's when the Monday Night Wars really exploded. And with the NWO, and then I got back in. From 96 on, I was still a serious tape trader, but I was a tape trader. But was when I met Will online is when I really got back into my hardcore fandom of it.
So I was going to ask about the magazines, and you mentioned it there. So as like a way that you were keeping your kind of touchstone to what was going on, was there any specific magazines that you were kind of reading, or did you have subscriptions, or were you just picking them up like if you saw it at the newsstand?
Pick them up at the newsstand. And in Texas, it really isn't newsstands. It's the grocery store. And so I was picking up like Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler, those type of things.
Okay.
The after mags, if you will.
And you weren't subscribing to, say, like Dirt Sheets at that time at all?
Nope. Finally in 96, I got saw a Meltzer ad in an after mag, and I'm trying to think what it was, but it was 96 I started subscribing, I want to say, and it might have been even 95, but I can swear it was 96. I thought it was during the Nitro era, and he'd give you like two free ones if you bought a subscription and you'd buy them in fours usually, or like I buy them every monthly. And so the first one, you get a couple free, and then I got hooked, and I was pretty much on it. I was probably an Observer subscriber since 96, pretty much 90% of the time. Like every now and then it lapsed, and I'm like, I got to renew type of thing. And then, you know, it went online, so then I got out of the print, which is much easier. For a while there, I always kept my prints. Now, since most of it's online, I don't have them. I threw them away. I might have a few like stuffed in a drawer somewhere. That's where I came. That's where I'm now, to wherever I write into Meltzer, he always signs my – always I'll sign I send in a show review or show feedback, and I'll sign it, Pete. He always – puts Pete Schirmacher, he puts in the letter section or something. It's something wacky like that.
Yeah, because I was going to say that as you brought that up, I feel like devolved from where I wanted to go earlier at this point, but I think we'll get back to it maybe at some point. But when you talked about getting rid of your print copies, and you know, you obviously brought that up as something I was interested in, because that's another thing it's another place where I relate to you. I feel is that you do show some signs of nostalgia, but no real nostalgia for tangible items. Am I off base in saying that? Like you said, you just got rid of them because they're available online, and you weren't one of these people that were trying to hold on to keeping the print newsletter. Like as soon as it was online, you were like, I'm going to get rid of this. Is that,
yeah.
Is that the case for you for most things?
Yeah. If all my discs were online, I wouldn't have discs, you know? I'd much rather the WWE Network, for example, have tons of house shows up on online where I'd be able to watch. I'd much rather not have discs cluttering my place where I live and stuff. There's certain things that I feel are replaceable. Anything like a print newsletter. I mean, I don't need to have it in print. I can read it on my computer or my iPhone or my iPad or what have you. I don't need something like that. I'd much rather have my discs at the flip of my remote, as opposed to having to pull out a binder, have it labeled, and then try to look through and try to find the disc. Trust me, I'd much rather have it at my fingertips. There are certain things you can't replicate. Like, for example, I'm a big I like to collect autographs. It's something I did as a kid. Me and my father and brother were always big autograph hound guys, and we'd go to collect baseball cards, and like my father, we kept the collection at my father's house. He has this gigantic walk-in closet all dedicated to baseball card collections and autographs, autograph books and stuff with people's pictures in it. And now in my apartment, I have just so many different autographs, from wrestlers to Mickey Mantle to Star Wars guys to I was a big fan of the Highlander TV show, to a giant poster of Adrian Paul, Highlander Endgame, he was the Duncan MacLeod character, to Battlestar Galactica, all over from stuff, just something I like it as decor.
Nice.
Yeah, that's I know you're definitely into a lot of the kind of sci-fi and all that stuff. And actually, when we get into the second part here, I think I'll have Adrian kind of maybe geek out with you about some of that stuff, just because I'm not into it as much. But before we do, I guess it's the one thing that I'm like really interested now to get into, but it's like so multi-parted that I'm going to have to like maybe ramble a little bit here to explain it. So I think I find that people get turned off on wrestling and then we'll have that long break when they kind of either they get burnt out because they've seen so much, or they kind of realize it's not on the level and it offends them that they think it wrestling was something that they weren't enjoying properly, and wrestling itself was trying to trick them, and the people involved with wrestling were trying to trick them, and it almost shames them, like they feel like they were stupid for falling for the trick rather than going like, oh, now that I'm in on it, I have a whole new set of things to enjoy about it. And as you talked about watching so much footage and that leading to the analytics, it almost feels like, you know, not taking a break, not being that kind of person who ever got turned off by wrestling, because I'm in the same boat with you. I never had that issue. Like, once you've seen so much, you're able to kind of not be excited more or less by the moves, let's say. Like, you enjoy them, but you are more excited by what they mean in the bigger picture. And as you talked about being able to, like, pick up details about people's actions and people throughout, like kind of psychoanalyzing and doing that. Do you find that that's kind of the case? Number one, when I was saying that, like, instead of getting turned off by wrestling by going, hey, this was trying to trick me this whole time, you went like, oh, now there's a whole new fun side of things to pick apart. And then that concept of kind of like psychoanalyzing things, picking apart little stuff. I mean, you mentioned it in basketball as a kid, but is that something that you find is a big part of your day-to-day life? Because I know myself, one of my biggest joys is to just sit around and kind of try to figure out why people do things that they do. Even people that I don't know, people on the subway, I'll kind of go like, why is that guy doing that? And I'll just think about it and talk it out in my head. Do you find all that stuff to kind of be the case for you?
Not really. Where it comes to people who I have no contact with or I have no reason to, then not really. But if it's like at work, if I see somebody and I feel like, oh, he's fishy or she's fishy, where there's something at stake, then yeah, then I'll analyze them and or analyze the situation or what have you.
Okay, but in like a day-to-day life, you don't really see yourself doing that just to random people.
No.
Okay. And do you think that part, as I said, like part of the thing for you with wrestling is why you're so good at analyzing it is having seen so much, it's more or less the minutiae of the moves aren't what excites you, but more or less the, or as I said, like the bigger picture, what it means in the context?
Yep, pretty much. You know, like you see, you hear a lot of guys, an example would be Sammy Guevara. Let's use him as an example. The guy who I think we're both pretty high on. I think both of us are high on him because of his character work, his personality, his charisma. But then you'll hear other people go, "Yeah, man, he has so many great moves." It's like you're almost like missing the picture on what makes him special, because like anyone can do cool moves. I mean, all you got to do is be athletic. And you're born that way. You know, actually having to pick up the nuances of being a heel and being able to bring that over is a whole different element, and that takes a hell of a lot more skill than being able to climb up on the top of a ring and then throw yourself onto a bunch of people who are ready to catch you.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's honestly so true. So we'll go ahead and take a break here, and then we'll come back, and I think we can get into some kind of like sci-fi, other stuff that you're into other than wrestling. And I kind of want to talk about you and your like kind of early adoption thing. It's kind of cool that, you know, you're not one of these people who gets stuck in your ways at all. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Well, all right. Well, so we're back. You mentioned being into the Highlander, and I know that you like to go to the comic cons, and I know a lot of times it's about like I would guess it's more about like getting signatures and stuff like that, correct?
Yep, totally. I'm not into collecting comic books. I mean, as a kid I was, but it's not my thing anymore. To people who do, I think that's cool as hell. But yeah, I have enough spacing problems with my wrestling discs. I don't need comic books and baseball cards to add to my my Peter Pan syndrome, if you will, you know.
but so do you go and do you get signatures from just wrestlers, or do you get signatures from comic writers, actors, everybody across the board?
No comic writers. It's wrestlers, pro athletes, and then like TV guys or movie guys.
Do
like,
wrestlers
you know,
show
like,
up to Comic-Con? I didn't know that. That's
interesting. Yeah, oh yeah. WWF has a WWE has a. They're always showing up at Wizard World ones and stuff. I've seen Cena there. The Bellas have been there. Undertaker.
Nice.
Who else? Some other ones. Becky Lynch. And then some of the other ones show up at some of the smaller ones. Yeah, like Flair. Man, he's going to malls. Seems like I think I met. Excuse me, Flair, Sting, Arn Anderson, Tito Santana, Demolition, Ted DiBiase, let's see here, Ron Simmons, The Godfather, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, just all, yeah, worlds of these guys are always popping up at these Comic-Cons in Texas anyway.
Oh, I was going to say, excuse me, so you mostly go to like regional Comic-Cons. Have you been to the San Diego Comic-Con ever?
No, I have not. Yeah, it's just something I think I would enjoy it, but I just think it'd be too crowded where I don't know if I would enjoy it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like it's so big now that it's like impossible, I guess, to move around because of how.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I want to, I mean, I don't know if I, you know, it's one thing to spend, you know, $30 for a ticket to go in and buy them when you're just, you know, there's no other cost, but then having to, you know, get a $200 plane ticket round trip or whatever, $300, whatever it is, $150. I just don't know if I would want to do that type of investment for a hobby.
Yeah. You mentioned your disc collection of wrestling. Do you have like a large, like physical media collection of wrestling that you've acquired over the years?
Yeah. It's sick. Between that and, my buddy Will, who is like the ultimate disc guy, he recently got separated from his wife, and so he has my place is a storage. So we have, between the two of us, I think we have almost over 100 binders of wrestling discs that wow. have like 200 discs in each one or 500 discs in each one, and then about 5 or 6 tubs full of discs and stuff. It's ridiculous.
I was picturing in my head like a wall of just discs going across the entire, like a big just shelf of wrestling discs, which I thought would be really cool, but I guess having them in binders makes more sense.
Yeah, it makes more sense organization-wise, and right now they're all stacked up. Like I have in my living room, I have my main ones are all stacked up in a corner. Then in my bedroom, I have all these things. For a while there, I wasn't even using my bedroom because we just dropped all Will's stuff, and I was just too lazy to move it around. I'm like, man, what am I going to do with all this stuff? And I'm like, maybe I can put it in the closet. And then I felt the closet, like there's a top shelf in the closet, but I felt it might crack with all the weight of the DVDs, and I'm like, I don't want that. And then everything come crashing down. So finally, I mustered the courage and created enough space, and now I'm back into being able to sleep in my bedroom.
So how do you, like, if you want to watch, say, X show from X date, how do you, like, find it? Like, do you have a system on how to find stuff, or do you...
Everything is listed, for example. One, say, a disc, let's say it's New Japan. I'll have it New Japan, and it'll have the year, for example, one binder might be 1987 to 1989, then I gotta flip through and find it. It's a pain in the ass. So
it sounds like an archivist.
Yeah, it is. It's a pain in the ass. That's why I was saying earlier, I'd much rather have it on the flip of my controller and make it a lot easier. I'm all for streaming services when they have the content up there and you don't have to go dig through your disc. It makes it so much easier. But yeah, it's a nightmare. So the discs I'm more likely to look are usually on the top, and the ones that I know I'm never gonna freaking look at, like TNA, are on the bottom type of thing.
Nice. Now you mentioned Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica earlier. This is something I can sink my teeth into. Which do you like more? Which franchise do you prefer more, Star Wars or Battlestar?
Oh, Star Wars. Nice. I mean, it was me, my father, and my brother. We probably went to see the original Star Wars movie in the theater.
Oh, nice.
Good God.
How old were you?
I'm not kidding you. Oh, I was five. I think it was 77.
Yeah.
My brother was three. And we probably went every weekend, every Friday. I think it was every Friday and Saturday or every Saturday and Sunday for like months on end. I mean, we were there all the time. Before my dad must have just been sick of this movie because we wanted to see it. It was even when The Force Awakens came out, me and my buddy went to the midnight showing on the night it opened, and we came out, and there was a news reporter out there, for a radio reporter, and wanted to talk to us, not spoiler free, and so I told him, and I was there talking about, wanted to know my history, and I explained, I'll go with this background, and how before the action figures were available, there was a picture of the cast in the newspaper, and I cut them out and put them up and then glued them to popsicle sticks, and they were my action figures until the action figures would come out. And needless to say, my friend's soundbite, they totally cut his. He never got on the air, and mine played because they loved that story. And I had people coming up to me because I've been told I have a unique voice, and people recognized it and heard the story, and they thought it was like just an awesome story and stuff. So I had probably about, I don't want to say like millions of people come up to me, but about 10 or 15 people who happened to listen to the radio the next day were like, yeah, we heard you were at the opener. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, that story about the popsicle action figures is awesome. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool.
That really is cool. You got to see the originals when it came out in theaters. You got to see the originals before George Lucas mucked it up with all his special add-ons and stuff.
On shot first and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Return of the Jedi might have been one of the first movies I ever went to by myself, or, you know, not with a parent, because I was 83, and so I was like 11 then. So yeah.
I'm kind of jealous that you got to see the originals in theaters, man. That's an experience that, like, when I read about it online, like, I mean, people who are old enough to remember going to see it, it's like, wow, I can't even imagine what must have gone through your head, like, sitting there watching those movies, especially as a kid, you know, like, the best time to watch those movies.
Oh, yeah, they hold up now. Two, they were state-of-the-art then, and I remember one of the times we went to the theater, they had all the guys, like, 3PO and R2-D2 and the Stormtroopers and Darth Vader, they're all out front, and then it was, like, the coolest thing as a kid, because, especially when you're five, you don't think of them, you don't think of it as, like, a movie, you're thinking of them as the real people, and it was, like, I was tripping out as a kid, I remember.
That's awesome. What where were you living at the time? Was this in Texas or?
No, this was in Chicago.
Oh, in Chicago. Okay. Let me ask you this, to tie this back into the wrestling thing. What Star Wars characters would you like to see in a wrestling match?
Oof. Okay. Well, I've seen Darth Vader recently. Or they had a guy. His indie wrestler named Cherry Ramones. He was Darth Ramones. And he did some force choke spots, and it was kind of funny. I'd have to say I want to see Luke Skywalker or Han Solo, and I'm sure there's some characters based off him. I mean, Han Solo to me is Ric Flair. I mean, and Luke Skywalker's Ricky Steamboat in a way. So,
see, there you go, Tim. There's some references you can get. You can understand, right?
Yeah, maybe I just need to rewatch these movies and think about it that way.
That's hilarious. It's funny that you mentioned a wrestler that dressed up. Did he dress up as Darth Vader, or would he just change his name to Darth something?
No, he had a cape, and he had the Darth Vader mask, and he had a manager who was supposed to be like the Grand Admiral. He was dressed as a Grand Admiral.
Oh, nice. There's a guy here in the Denver area who's a huge, I guess he's a Broncos fan, and he dresses up as Darth Vader, but with Broncos color, so it's like orange and blue. It's like, imagine an orange and blue Darth Vader costume that says Broncos on it. It's pretty crazy. He's like a local. People know him because you'll see him pop up on social media. I don't know who he is or what his name is, but I know it's the Denver Broncos Darth Vader dude. So that's pretty cool. You mentioned us. So you're not really into collecting like collectibles. Like, I was gonna ask you, both of you. This goes to both of you, but especially you. You're not into collecting like those Funko Pop dolls and those little bobblehead things that you see, whether it's for Star Wars or for wrestling at all?
I have one in my apartment. Actually, I have two. I have Well, three, actually. I'm looking at them. I have one Rey Mysterio and then two Hulk Hogans. They're identical Hulk Hogan's ones, so I don't even know why I have two Hulk Hogans. But, yeah, that's it.
So you're more about collecting the actual shows and, like the fun little figurines and all that. You're not really into that sort of thing?
Yeah, not my thing, because, one, they take up a lot of space. As a kid, I mean, I loved collecting, like, Star Wars action figures. I had them all. I mean, I remember as a kid at a party, we were recreating the Death Star blowing up, and we put firecrackers in in their Death Star and blew it up and stuff. But as an adult, it just wasn't my thing, the action figures, because I think you just look. And maybe it's just not my... and it's not me trying to shit on it as a hobby. It's just I don't understand it. It to me, you look at it once and there you go. But like actual footage, you can get the enjoyment of doing it, looking at it over and over and over again, because you could always find something you missed or just bring it to a fun warm spot that you always enjoy type of thing.
I was gonna say, is collecting figuring, is it not much of a wrestling thing? Because I see a lot of wrestling toys all the time, and like at Target in the toy section. I see it at Walgreens, those little mystery figurines, which I've actually bought a couple myself for wrestling. Is collecting toys and stuff like that not big amongst wrestling fans? Would you say, or is it just sort of? I guess it just depends on the person. Like, what would you?
I still think there's a. I think there might be. I know like Michael Elgin, who's a wrestler, he collects that stuff. It's just not me. And I think where I on Twitter and on wrestling message boards, you're talking more about matches than the actual, like, hey, I found this figurine. I think that would be an actual, like, a collectibles board. So it might be not something I'm following, so I really wouldn't know for sure, you know?
Okay, because some message boards will have a forum, for example, just for toys and collectibles. So I would assume there's probably got to be some wrestling message board that has a forum just for that, right? Because I see that a lot with Star Wars, especially. Like, there's toys and collectibles, there's props, there's costumes. You know, they have their own forums.
I'm sure. I'm sure there's an interest, because if there isn't, then why the hell would be people making the toys? I mean, there are people collected. There's for kids, obviously, but those kids become adults and they need hobbies and like they like to collect that type of stuff. Like my father, he's a big hates wrestling, but he loves his baseball, football, and he collects his little office. He's Mr. Fantasy Baseball, Football, Basketball, and he has like a shitload of banners that he's won. And his other things is he has I think it's five generations of Michael Jordan, and then he has the New York Knicks and there's one other team, I forget who it was, that he has of their figurines that are really detailed, not like a toy, but more like a figurine type of thing.
What's that?
Well, it's kind of funny. He had the really nice ones, and my sister's, my nephew would always want to go in there and play with them. So he ended up buying the cheapy toys and trying to convincing the kid, no, these are the ones you want to play with.
Yeah, see, I think it's fun. I started collecting Star Wars Funko Pop figures. I have like five or six now, actually. As a 31-year-old man, I'm not afraid to say it. But yeah, no, I bought a new one last night at Best Buy. So I was just thinking about that. I was thinking, like, do wrestling fans kind of do the same thing with? I always see WWF or WF. What's the big
WWE?
I always see that they have a whole section in the toy section at Target. It's just wrestling stuff. Like, it's not a huge section, but it's like it's got its own little slice in the toy aisle there. And, yep. And I'm assuming that's like a big licensing thing for them, right? But you don't really see it with like you guys always talk about, like what Tim mentions, the New Japan and NXT and this and that and the other. But I only ever see the WWE wrestling. So it's like I almost wonder why the other smaller but also big wrestling organizations don't have toy licensing and stuff. It's kind of interesting.
They probably do in Japan. I bet you there's New Japan action figures in Japan, but there's probably not enough for kids, because that's what the bottom line is. The kids are really the what they're aiming for, and there's not enough kids who probably watch New Japan Pro Wrestling to make it profitable.
Yeah,
there's customs and there's Funko Pops of all different kinds of wrestlers, but yeah, in the store you're only going to see WWE.
Yeah,
but there is a it's like I don't even know the name of the company. I shouldn't even try to guess. But they did independent wrestlers, and actually there was like famously a big to-do that they signed a contract to do a wrestling figure for Kevin Steen and ROH, and then he signed with WWE, and Vince McMahon was pissed off because they were selling Kevin Steen action figures when he had Kevin Owens, the same guy, on his roster before they were selling figures for him. So there are some here and there, but it's definitely a niche product.
Yeah, okay. They just did one with Jeff Cobb, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
That's what I was kind of getting at. It almost feels like a very niche thing. Now, speaking of Vince McMahon, Tim, I saw a picture of him with Donald Trump in the Oval Office recently. Vince McMahon looks like a very broad-shouldered, kind of buff dude. Is he kind of a buff dude, Vince McMahon?
Oh, he's ripped.
Oh, yeah, dude, he's huge.
That's what I figured. But I didn't know for sure. Just the way he looked in his suit was like, oh, he looks like he's like a buff dude wearing a suit.
Oh, so. Yeah, he's been on Muscle and Fitness and ripped to the bones.
Yeah, he was just on Muscle and Fitness recently.
Really?
And he's like
70.
70s, yeah, 70s.
I was
going to
say, how old is he? I thought he was like in his 60s or something. You're saying he's 70?
But he's on, I mean, he's on the gat. I mean, famously, he's on steroids. So,
yeah.
You know, it's
and,
like.
And he changed wrestling from being. Into a body business. It used to not always be about the body, but yeah, he changed it because he was into it and wanted. I mean, he even started a bodybuilding federation that died an early death before the XFL.
Yeah. Do a lot of wrestlers? Obviously, I see a lot of buff wrestlers. Would you say a lot of them, you know, are on the juice, or do they just really work out hard? Generally,
I think it's both.
A little bit of both.
Yeah, it's a combination of both. There's guys who are obviously on it, and there's guys who aren't, and then there's guys who it doesn't matter what they do. I mean, sometimes you'll be surprised about who is on steroids and who isn't, because you'll see someone and think, like, that guy doesn't look like he's on steroids. Well, it turns out if he wasn't on steroids, he'd look even shittier, you know? So it's just, it's kind of a mix of everything.
But there's a certain wrestling physique I've noticed where it's not like super detailed muscles. It's just more about just big muscles and not so much like these guys that you see, you know, in actual bodybuilding competitions that are, like, just shredded like crazy, right? Like, there's a certain wrestling physique that they want, right? They don't want to have, like, all the detailed little tiny muscles that you see bulging everywhere, right? Or am I wrong?
Well, nowadays it's more about work rate and even less about characters, where that gets over. So it's more of like a CrossFit type of look is what kind of where they're going with, where they're like, they're not gigantic men. Like, if you look at me in pictures of the guys from the 80s, they're usually taller than me. And now the guys who are now around here, I'm taller than them. So a lot of the guys are like 5'10", 5'11", but they have that CrossFit, you know, nice little six pack, good muscles, but they look like an athlete as opposed to a wrestler.
Right. And yeah, I've seen pictures of wrestlers from the 80s, and I swear, like, they look buff, but they also had kind of a beer gut thing going at the same time back in the 80s.
That's also a steroid thing. That's a steroid thing from steroids during when you go through cycles and stuff.
Oh,
yeah, they'll have, like, a bloated kind of gut. And I mean, Pete's right. I mean, now it's more about the functional strength than it is that CrossFit being able to do everything kind of body. But before Vince McMahon made it was kind of doing the kind of bodybuilder look, it was at kind of what Adrian's talking about, which is just guys who just look big and strong
larger
and fit. Yeah, but they're not necessarily look like super detailed or shredded or even like they'd be super great athletes, but just like they'd be impossible to beat in a fight or something, you know, or that's the way people used to look at fights.
Yeah, like they have a good muscle to fat ratio, whereas like actual bodybuilder competition dudes, like it's like very little fat and more muscle, whereas with wrestlers it looks like they have like a pretty good balance of fat and muscle, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, now I'm not an expert on this shit, but that's just, you know, from what I've seen. So,
well, and what it comes down to is it's about, you know, on the indies, it's about being what the WWE isn't sometimes, because that's all they can get. It's kind of like, you know, it's like the barbecue, where they say the barbecue got taken over because it was the trash meat that was left over. They start doing this to cook it to, like, make it the best. So they kind of make the best of what they got. And if the WWE wants guys that look like they're bodybuilders, well, then the independents are going to be all guys that don't look like they're bodybuilders, you know? So that's who kind of stands out for them.
Gotcha. Interesting. All right.
Yeah, well, Adrian, I don't know if you had any more questions, but I think we're going to have to go to our final break already.
Our final break already?
I know. It seems like it just flew by, didn't it?
It really did.
It did. Well, all right. We'll go ahead and head to break.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, well, we're back, and Pete, I feel like we barely scratched the surface, honestly. We didn't really get to know you as well as we'd like to, but maybe you could knock our socks off with our last final question, and then we can plan to have you back to get a little bit deeper with everything. Does that sound good?
No, that definitely sounds good. I'm always game. I'm not a big fan of talking about myself, but I can do it.
Let me tell you, as I said, coming from the outside as just a fan of the network, as a fan of wrestling podcasts in general, this stuff was what was interesting me. And, you know, we talked earlier, that's kind of like my thing. I like that. But I can't believe I'm the only one. So even though you don't want to talk about yourself, I bet there's a lot of people who have been listening to you for a long time who are super excited to hear more about you.
Maybe.
Well, Tim. Yes. So you're saying it's time for the final question.
Yes, it is time for the final question. That's our big production value here. All right. So, Pete, someone who only knows you, we could even say from the board, interactions on the board, from your podcasts, what would be something that if they found out about you, they'd be shocked or surprised?
I might have even mentioned this before, but it's still a damn good story, so I'm going to bring it up if I haven't brought it up. But, okay, in college, me and my buddies were out drinking hardcore, and we were doing some, I'm sure it was some illegal drugs, at a wild night, and we were hungry, and we're making jokes about breaking into the college cafeteria. We're like, no. We ended up getting pizza, and we started playing pranks on one another. And so I decided to take a big old shit into this giant garbage can full of water. Knock on my friend's door as they open up the damn door. The trash can falls down, and in comes is a big pile of shit on a floater of water. It floats into their room. And
oh, geez.
I'm, of course, laughing hysterically, thinking it's the greatest thing ever. And of course, this is at like 4 o'clock in the morning, mind you, because we're just totally trashed. And I go back and I fall asleep, and those fucks, I guess, either grabbed my shit or took shit of their own and lit a pizza box on fire.
Oh.
I thought, and mind you, we're living in a dorm room that was 16 to, it was, I can't remember how tall it was, but I want to say it was 12 to 18 stories tall, this dorm room we were staying in, okay? And so they lit a pizza box on fire. I chased him out, thought I put it out. But when I closed the door, it reignited. That caused the backdraft, if you will, and caused my room to catch on fire and smoke. I was able to put the fire out, but all the fire alarms in the damn building went off. And everyone gets evacuated. I'm getting interrogated. I'm saying it was some guy randomly, I didn't lock my door, randomly came in and threw a fireball because I didn't want to narc my friends out. And they didn't believe that. So I end up going down to my friends. I'm like, dude, I'm on the ropes. I don't know what to fucking do. My friends are like, just tell the truth. We are all fucking drunk doing stupid things. We'll all do it together. I tell the truth, and we all get kicked out of the dorm, and they put us all at different places. The new school newspaper writes up the story, but there's two different stories, and once the story made it sound like there was like just shit all over the room, and I was, and they used the term, they used the word feces, and my one friend, he's such an idiot, couldn't pronounce it, and he was reading out loud to people, and he goes, and there's fetchies in the room. And he's like, shoo, what's fetchies? I go, shit, it's called feces, you idiot. So that got publicized. So it was all my name, and they made me sound like the biggest lame loser, because these guys were true freshmen, and I was a third year freshman. Because I, in college form, if you take 15 hours, and so then you go to your next, then you become a sophomore. But if you don't have 30, I think it's, if you don't have your 30 hours, you were considered a third year freshman. I think I did 12 and 12 my first year in college. Oh. So I was a 20-year-old third year freshman. So it made me sound like I was the biggest piece of fucking crap on the planet, and no pun intended. And so that's what ends up happening. I end up moving. I get kicked out, and I move into a dorm room with some real weirdo, and I don't even, there's not even a bed for me. I just have a mattress on the floor for about months, and then our punishment was we'd have to go to dorm rooms and to businesses, and we had to meet with the dean of discipline. And people might not know this. They think there's usually, because of Animal House, the movie, people usually think there's only one dean. No, there's like multiple, there's tons of deans. And we met with the dean of discipline. And our discipline was doing this community service of going out and speaking about the dangers of drinking and messing with fire. And when the places we were booked to go do it, my two friends end up saying, fuck this. They quit school and transferred out. I end up getting all the heat. And one of the places I had to go discuss it was this at 8 o'clock. Or no, I think it was like 9:30 at night at an old folks home. Talking about the dangers of drinking and playing with fire. And there was like one person there listening to me. It's terrible. So,
all
yeah,
this
that,
because you guys just decided to fuck around, huh?
Yep, all that. And it was just the worst. And I mean, we're still friends this day. Me and all those guys, it was just really scary. And yeah, we were so shit-faced. We're like throwing like dishes out. Even before the prank started, I was on the ground floor yelling at them, and they were trying to throw dishes at me from like the 10th story. Stuff is shattering. Oh God. Yeah. So, it was that. And so and the worst part was my stuff. We couldn't take it all out at once. So every time I had to go get clothes or what have you, I had to get escorted up to my room where my old roommate was. And it felt like I was like the biggest criminal. Like I was like this, like I was Al Capone or something. So that, I don't know if I ever, I might have mentioned this part of the story. I know I never went into total detail about it, but there's something shocking that people wouldn't know.
I like yeah, that the school newspaper wrote about it. That's some top tier journalism right there.
Most of my classes were gigantic, so people wouldn't recognize it, but I was in a small theater arts class that only had 12 people. And the professor of that class was Larry Hovis. And if you guys don't know the name, you might know the show he was on, where he was a writer. He was a writer on that old TV show. If Johnny Sorrow was here, he would know what it was. With early Goldie Hawn was on it. I can't remember what it was, but he was a writer on that show. And he would later, if you saw it, I'm sure you might have heard of Hogan's Heroes, maybe.
Yeah.
He played the guy with the weird hat. And was a regular on Hogan's Heroes.
What was his name? Larry something?
Huh?
Larry, what was it?
His name is Larry Hovis.
Hovis.
And he's passed away now. But when I came in, they all had the newspaper up in their faces. And I'm like, oh, shit. And they're all laughing at me for about the first half hour of class.
This was, where was this? Where were you going to school?
It's now called Texas State, but it was Southwest Texas when I went there, and this happened, I guess, in 92, 93.
Right. Wow.
That's a phenomenal story.
I wish you would have kept the paper so you could like frame it, you know, just to have it.
I had it for a while because I thought it was funny, but my after the fact, my mother was just mortified when I like showed like a relative it once. So she made sure she got every copy and destroyed them all because she's big on not embarrassing the family.
Wow. Your mom's real big on not embarrassing the family, huh? What's such a prude?
Yeah, if you do embarrass the family, make sure you hide it so the rest of the family doesn't know about it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, jeez, Pete. That is fantastic. Well, I don't know if there's anything else you want to plug, Pete, and thank you so much for being on the show, obviously.
No, just, you know, you know, follow me and Tim over on This Week in Wrestling Indies International, me and Johnny on Space City and NWA On Demand podcast. We'll be recording later on today, so that'll be dropping later this week. I was on Clothesline, on the last Clothesline and Headlines, I think on the last stanza, interviewing Brad Stutz from CWF Mid-Atlantic, and he was the play-by-play guy. I mean, it was the head and lead announcer over at Scenic City Rumble this weekend. So we go into some interesting booking talk and stuff. So check it out.
Nice. Adrian, is there anything you wanted to get out to the people before we go?
No, just to follow up.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Call me at Titans O'Wrestling on Twitter.
There we go.
Follow us at Lucha Undead. Follow me at Della Boots. Follow my other podcast at Story Germ. And that's it, Tim.
All right. Well, I want to give a shout out to Mario Cicito for doing the artwork, not just for Space City that he just recently did new artwork for, but also for my show. We'll do it live, which a new episode should be coming out here sometime this month. Got everything kind of in order to record. Just
didn't
need to actually
do our logo
do it.
Too?
He did our logo for this show.
For this show
he's
yeah.
a fantastic art man. Yeah, he's done some great stuff for other podcasts on the network. Just great guy. Also, as Pete mentioned, the Scenic City Rumble. I believe there was a couple matches that were streamed over on the Periscope for Wrestling with Words, my other kind of website I work with. So go check that out. I'm not sure if it's still up on the Periscope, but I think you might be able to catch it if you get over there quick. They are sponsoring Scenic City Invitational again, so lots of good stuff coming out there. And now the Scenic City, I guess, Trios. There's going to be a Scenic City Trios tournament coming as well later in the year, so that's all very exciting stuff. Usually, this show closes out with me extorting the virtues of the three Bs, right? Beers, buds, banter. Those are important.
Yes.
But this week, for our guest, the three Bs are... Or the three Bs are not the most important thing. It's the three Fs. It's good friends, good fires, and good feces. Good night.